Okay, well, what'd you think? That's my bucket list, things I want to do in my lifetime. Hey, welcome to East Lake Church. Thank you for being here. I'm so grateful because there's lots of different places you could be, but you decided to be here. Also, thank you to everybody who's watching online. This is your church too. We started East Lake Church out here in West Valley. Haven't been going very long with one simple message. Really, the whole message is you don't have to work your way to God. That you don't have to work your way to get God to love you, that actually God's love is a gift. You don't work to earn it. And we're in this series right now called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm Rob, and I'm the lead pastor. And in this series, we're taking a look at different characters in the Bible, an honest look on how they walked to God. How is it that they lived their life? And our message is you don't work your way to God. And oftentimes in life, if you miss one little message, a certain message, things can be, you know, so different. Or if you hear the message, your life can go so different. Here's an analogy. Let's say that, you know, a message goes out to everybody you work with. I mean, everybody at your job gets a message from the boss, take Monday off with pay. And so everybody, you know, gets the message except for you. And so tomorrow when you go to work, you show up normal time, you start doing your work, and you're like, hey, what's up? Nobody's showing up at work, and nobody's, you know, time goes by and still nobody's there. So you call your buddy, and you're like, hey, what's going on? Why aren't you at work? He goes, didn't you get the message? And you're like, what message? He's like, the boss gave us the entire day off today with pay. And you're like, no way. He's like, yeah, man, I can't believe you missed the message. I mean, everybody's got the day off and we get paid for it. And you're thinking, oh man. I could have slept in this morning. I could have stayed up later last night. I could have like gone up to the canyons with my family. I mean, things could have been so different for me if I just would have heard the message. And so our message is you don't work your way to God. Jesus, his central message was God accepts you right where you are and loves you. And it's possible to have a relationship with him. In fact, his sort of big message was there's a big difference between a religion and a relationship. And it's the big idea this weekend. You can write in your notes. You can switch from religion to a relationship. And let me read you a little something from the Bible to give this credibility. This is Jesus talking. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. And so this part of the Bible, some of you may recognize, it actually comes from a conversation that Jesus is having with this man that's making this switch from religion to relationship. His name is Nicodemus. And we'll take a look at his life today in kind of three different snapshots that it shows in the Bible. The good parts of it, bad parts of it, even the ugly parts. And this first snapshot of Nicodemus, you can write in your notes, acceptance instead of image. That's his first snapshot. And let me read you sort of what's going on here. Now there was a Pharisee, a man named Nicodemus, who was a member of the Jewish ruling council. He came to Jesus at night, circle that, and said, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, for no one could perform the signs that you're doing if God was not with him. Jesus replied, very truly, I tell you that no one can see the kingdom of God unless they're born again. How can someone be born again when they're old? Nicodemus asked. And surely they can't go back for a second time up into their mother's womb. All the women say amen to that. And Jesus answered, very truly, I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God unless they're born of water and the Spirit. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. So we're scratching our head going, what are you talking about, Jesus? Well, the first thing, know this, Nicodemus is a Pharisee. And Pharisees are people that believe that the key to having a relationship with God is your good works. And the most important thing to a Pharisee, when they teach everybody else, is, Your image is you have to have a good image. Your image is the most important thing when it comes to life. You want to always try to look good. And Jesus was talking to a large group of them one time, and he said, you know, you're like whitewashed tombs. You look great on the outside, you know, great image, but on the inside you're dying. And he wasn't scolding them. He wasn't trying to rebuke them. He was saying, I understand. Because isn't it true that whenever you constantly try to maintain an image, it just kills you? Who do you know that's been crushed by that? They had an image they had to maintain in their family. Or they had an image, a religious image they had to maintain for a church. Or maybe there was like some ideal that they felt like they had to be. And it can even be annoying when you see them. Their teeth is white and their kids are always perfect. And they have the latest car and the best house. And they always know everything. And they never have any problems. And it can be kind of frustrating. But if you want to maintain compassion for them, because that Jesus, he was speaking compassion, always remember that they're probably dying on the inside. Because it's so hard to maintain a perfect image. And Nicodemus, he's a man struggling with his religion. He's not sure that he can believe the same things that he's believed all of his life. Nicodemus has gone to the same church his whole life. It's the same church that his family goes to, and his grandparents, and his brothers and sisters, and all of his friends. Remember, when Jesus came to earth, everybody in that particular area was Jewish. So they were all the same, and they all went to the Jewish church. So everybody went to the exact same church. There's all these networks where everybody's a part of the exact same church, and everybody believes the same sort of thing. And here's Nicodemus, and you know, it's a huge thing when you're thinking about dropping your religion or changing it. Here's Nicodemus, and you know, his family goes to that church, and his friends go to that church. And the schedule of his entire week was probably centered around what was happening at the church. That's the kind of culture Jesus came into, that everybody was Jewish and everybody went to the Jewish church. And here's Nicodemus, he's struggling with what he's always believed. Can I continue to be a part of it? And it says that he approaches Jesus at night. He wants to keep everybody in the dark. He's not ready for anybody to know that he has an interest in Jesus. He doesn't want anybody to see. And I did want to ask the question, what is it that you keep in the dark? You don't want anybody to see it. I mean, you keep that in the dark. You don't want anybody to see it. It's you know, you wish you didn't even know it was there. You know, we keep things in the dark, and even our relationship with God, we can keep others in the dark about that. He approaches Jesus at night. I'm not ready for anybody to know this, that this is where I'm at with God. Think about this. Here's an analogy of what it must be like for God. Let's say that, you know, you're with your wife or you're with your girlfriend, you're at the movies and everything's going good. You get out of the movies, you're holding hands, you're walking down the sidewalk. Now here comes this girl walking down the sidewalk and starts calling out your wife's name, and they get close and they just start jabbering and talking. You notice as they do, your wife lets go of your hand. And you know, she doesn't even introduce you. She's just talking. Then finally the friend says, "Oh, hey, who's this? Is this your husband?" And your wife looks at you and then looks at her and says, "Well, you know, he's the guy standing next to me." I mean, and then she says this. How would you feel if you heard this? "You know, we think marriage is a very private thing. It's not something that you talk about." And like, she wants to keep you in the dark. I mean, that's what's happening in this story to Jesus. And I don't know, you know, that'd be hard for me, but the Lord's amazing. I mean, he doesn't get angry. He doesn't dictate to Nicodemus, you know, under what conditions he'll be with him. Something to remember about Jesus: it doesn't matter how or where or when you turn to him, he will be there. Nicodemus needs to keep it a secret and come to him during the night, and there's Jesus. Religion says, clean up your life, get your act together, and then you can approach God. And we see in this story that Nicodemus says, these are the conditions, these are the terms that I need, and there Jesus is. Do you need to turn to God? But you convinced yourself, especially in the dark areas of your life. Oh, I could never see Jesus in that dark area of my life, and yet here's the Lord. And Nicodemus, He starts talking to Jesus. He says, I know that you're God. He goes, the problem is I don't know how to fit you into my religion. In other words, Jesus, my religion doesn't look like you. So here's this man, he's been religious all his life and he's believed all sorts of things. And then he sees Jesus and Jesus and his religion, he can't get him on the same page. And you know, there's been a lot of things started, lots of churches and movements and clubs and all sorts of things that have been started in the name of Jesus, and they don't even resemble the Lord. How would you like it if somebody started some club or some big organization and they started it in your name? They did, the whole thing was all about you, and you saw it happen, and you thought, wait a minute, that doesn't even look like me. And Jesus goes through that every day. He went through that when he came to earth and he saw the church. He's like, wait a minute, that church doesn't look like me. That church is acting like it's all about God, and it doesn't look like me at all. And sometimes, just like Nicodemus, he's like, I can't get you, God, and my religion on the same page. So I think I'm going to have to choose. And here's how it shows up in our life as Christ followers. Is like, we can't get what we want to do in life. We can't, there's something happening in our life. There's something that we're doing. And we can't get that on the same page as our relationship with God. So now there has to be a choice. Either I step away from God or I have to deal with something. Nicodemus. And you know, he says something interesting when he's talking to Jesus. He says, all the signs point to it. What are the signs pointing to in your life that say you need to go in a different direction? And all the signs are pointing to it. If you want to be a good husband someday, you really want to like have a great family and be a great husband to your wife, and there's something going on in your life, and all the signs are pointing that you have to go in another direction if you're actually going to get to be the person you want to be. All the signs are pointing to it. Here's the thing. Sometimes we know. I mean, sometimes in life we don't know, we're not even sure, we're like really unclear, but a lot of times in life, I'll speak for myself, a lot of times in life, I know. All the signs are pointing to it. If I want to be a good employee, if I want to have a great walk with God, if I want to have my finances be different, all the signs are pointing to it. They're undeniable. They're there to be seen. I'm going to have to go in another direction. And that's what Nicodemus tells Jesus. It's almost like he says, but there's a problem. Because I can barely turn towards you and I don't even have the strength to go in another direction. Jesus. I mean, what's going to replace my religion? You know, what's my family going to think? How am I going to deal with the fallout of this thing? I mean, I can't get you on the same page. And if I turn, sometimes when you follow Jesus, you can't. All you can do is turn. You know the next right step, but you can't take it. And that's really where Nicodemus is. He says, all the signs point to I have to go a different direction, Jesus, but I don't... And imagine what this is like. He pours all this out. He doesn't know Jesus. Pours all this stuff out to him. It's like, here's where I'm at. You know, I understand. It's all about image, and I don't want to do that anymore. And, my religion that I've been a part of is a huge thing, but I'd rather have a relationship. And all the signs point to it that I have to choose between you and my religion. And so that's where I'm at, Jesus. And then he waits, and like, what is the profound thing that Jesus is going to say to him? And here's what he said. He starts talking about babies. Jesus starts talking about babies being born, and Nicodemus is probably thinking, Lord, I was thinking you might have something a little bit more profound. I just poured my heart out here, and Jesus starts talking about babies and how babies are born. He gives him this analogy. You know, Nicodemus is scratching his head. He's trying to figure out, like, what are you talking about? He says, Nicodemus, listen, wait, just think about babies. Just think about babies for a moment. Do you know babies? They just believe that they're accepted. And do you know babies? They expect someone bigger than them to help. So what I'm telling you, Nicodemus, is the difference between a religion and a relationship is when you have a relationship with God, it's almost like you're like a baby. You know you're accepted. And you expect someone bigger, God, to help you. Religious people can't ask for help because if they do, it ruins their image. But when you have a relationship with God, you know you're accepted and you know you have help. And so this is where the snapshot ends. I mean, Nicodemus kind of walks away scratching his head going, babies? What's he talking about? Obviously, I can't go. Now, the next time we see him, it's further along in the story. There's this other snapshot, and you know it'll come up on your screen if you're online. But for us, here's the second one: courage instead of compromise. So the first thing in this relationship is I have acceptance instead of image, and the second one, courage instead of compromise. Religion always creates compromise, but a relationship with God produces courage. Let's see what it looks like. The second snapshot. Here's it is right here. This is happening. This is a story about Jesus and the religious leaders and Nicodemus. It's the second snapshot. Finally, the temple guards went back to the chief priests and the Pharisees, who asked, "Why didn't you bring him?" Talking about Jesus. And they say, "No one ever said the type of things that he does," the guards said. "You mean he has deceived you also?" the Pharisees retorted. "Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed in him? No. But this mob that knows nothing about the law, there's a curse on them." Nicodemus, who had gone to Jesus earlier and who was one of their own number, asked, Does your law consider a man to be guilty without first hearing him to find out what he's been doing?" So now remember, in the very first part of the story, Nicodemus, very, very private, in the dark, and now it's not private. It's a very, very public setting. And let me just, like, tell you what's happening here. Because Jesus now, he's been ministering for a while. He's been, you know, with the people for a while. It turns out there's a lot of people that are kind of like Nicodemus. You know, they maybe want a relationship with God, but they're questioning their religion. So more and more people are turning to Jesus. Larger crowds are with him. All these people are starting to move towards Jesus. And the Pharisees are like, "No way. We're not letting our churches empty out for this guy. I mean, we're going to have to stop this thing." So they have this big, huge temple that's, you know, part of this big Jewish church. And then there's these guards there that guard this temple. They're like the, I don't know why, but they're like the mall guards. So they get the guards and they say, go get that Jesus and bring him back here, because we're going to stop this, what he's doing. So the guards go out to where these meetings are held, and they see Jesus. And the first thing they notice is that he talks in a way that's very different than any of the religious leaders that they've ever seen. And the way he is with the people is way different. The way that people feel about being with Jesus is way different. And they're watching this thing, and they're listening to this thing, and they're seeing the contrast between the religious leaders and Jesus. And so they show back up, and they're empty-handed. And the Pharisees are livid. They are so angry. They're like, "What is going on here? We told you what to do." Ask you a question. When is the last time you told somebody what to do and they didn't do it? How did you respond? Or flip it around. When's the last time someone told you what to do and no uncertainty, this is what you're supposed to do, and you didn't do it? How did they respond? And you know, the religious leader, I mean, people in churches, I mean, church leaders, they can really get angry when they tell you what to do and you don't do it. They are so angry. They're like, "What are you talking about? Are you blind? I mean, we told you to bring him back here." They are really, really super angry. And here's what they say. They say, "Do any of us believe in him? None of us believe in him." And at that point, they're so emphatic, "Do any of the Pharisees believe in him? No!" And Nicodemus is in the room, and he's probably thinking, you know, "Well, actually, there is one of us that might believe in him." And by the way, a couple things we see about religion here. Firstly, is that when you're religious, when you're all about religion, more and more religion, no relationship with God, at some point you'll always care more about the religious rules than the people. And they use an old trick here. They say, you know, "These people, this mob, you know, they're cursed." Religious leaders will often say, "If you don't do what I say, your life is going to end up a wreck. Your future is going to be a disaster." That's an old religious trick. Scare people about the future that nobody can prove. So the first thing about religion is you'll care more about the rules than the people. And then secondly, and here's one, the more religious I become, it's all about my religion, no relationship with God, all about my religion, at some point I will feel superior to other people. Did you hear how they talk about this? They call them a mob, and then they say, "What do they know? They don't know anything about God. They don't know anything about following God. They have no idea about this stuff. We're the people that know. We're the ones that, like, we're the big guys that know all about God and how to follow God. Why would you listen to them? We're superior. And when you become, like, all about your religion, at some point you won't care about people and you'll feel superior to them. And Nicodemus is watching the whole thing and he's probably thinking, man, like, the moment of opportunity arrives, and what an odd place. Why is it in the river of life that the opportunity can arrive in the rapids? He's probably thinking to himself, I just wanted to kind of let it creep out that I was with Jesus. I mean, look at this thing. This is like a full-on fight going on here. And do you mean I'm going to have to raise my hand and say something about Jesus in this situation? Is there any opportunity that's come to you, and it's come in such an awkward way because we don't get to stage opportunities, just boom, here they come, big opportunity, and you were actually trying to hide. Now the opportunity's here. What are you hiding from, and then all of a sudden you were found? What is it in your life? Where is it that you were so sure you were safe because you were hiding, and then all of a sudden you're not hidden anymore? I had this friend that at the university, and he had the stomach flu. And so he has to go into class. He's got the stomach flu really, really bad and all the diarrhea that comes along with it. And this guy's just like a mess. But he's got to go to class. And so, like an idiot, he goes ahead and eats breakfast anyways. And he gets into class. He's only in class about 10 minutes. And he just feels like gargle, 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 gargle. It's like, you know, the Alhambra bottle. Just, but he's like, oh, my goodness. And he just knows he's got to get out of that class, man. He's got to get to the bathroom. Of course, when you're like that, you don't want to go into just a regular public bathroom because he knows it's going to be noisy. And by the way, men don't make noise in the bathroom. Men don't talk in the bathroom. Men actually know how to use a public restroom. Now, I don't know what women think they're doing because they don't know. Women will go in there and have a full-on chat and talk and social time in the bathroom. Men go into the bathroom. They don't speak to another man while they're in there. They go in, they do what they have to do, and they go out. It's a sacred place. You don't do any, like, men know how to use and conduct themselves in a bathroom. Women, they act like it's a party in there. My friend knows. I mean, there's a man code. You don't go into a public restroom and just, like, blow groceries in front of everybody. So he's thinking, what am I going to do? And then he remembers there's a little bathroom down in the absolute bowels of the university, way down, only the maintenance people use, several floors down. There's a little public bathroom with, like, one stall, a couple urinals. Nobody ever goes in there. He's like, that's where I'm going. So down the steps, all the way to the end of the hallway, it's way over in the corner, just one restroom. The door doesn't lock, but he's thinking, hey, this is totally safe. So he goes into the stall, and, you know, like I said, I mean, he's got the stomach flu, and he just, it, you know, Dinah, don't you blow. I mean, it just starts going. And right in the, let me tell the story, right in the middle of this thing, he's just realizing, I got the place to myself, you know, and somebody walks in. And he cannot believe it. I mean, so now he starts white knuckling, trying to stop, you know, not make any noise, you know, lift his feet up so nobody can see what kind of shoes he has on so he'll be discovered later. And he just tries where he can. And whoever walked in, you know, is one of those type of dudes that is very insensitive. Because when you come into a situation like that and you see a guy in the stall and you realize, ooh, you know, this is a private thing, you go in, you go, you get your hand washed, you get out. But this guy is whistling, taking his time. I mean, he's like one of those type of guys. He probably had a man bag on, you know, he's like really like it. And my friend, he finally just, you know, he can't hold it anymore. So, boom, the volcano goes off, you know, just off and off and off. And he's so embarrassed. And this guy never leaves the room. And then he walks over to where this guy's sitting. He walks over to the door. He sees his feet approach. He's like, what the heck? And the guy, like as a joke, bangs on the door. Bam, bam, bam. Go for it. And then he runs out. Now you might be thinking, how is he going to fit this into the talk? Well, here it is right here. Just here it comes right here. Sometimes, just very unexpectedly, I mean, we think we're completely hidden. And Nicodemus, I mean, he thinks it's all in the dark. Nobody knows. And now here he is. Like he's going to have to say something. And he's very clever how he does it. He sees that there are these people that are all about rules. It's like he raises his hand. Like he knows that they're the kind of people that keep, they make everybody keep rules. But he recognizes that they can't keep a rule that they themselves have made. Because they're bringing Jesus here. I mean, their plan is murder. And so he realizes, wait a minute, this is another bad thing about religion. These people make rules that they can't even keep. They expect other people to keep them, but they don't keep them. It happens in politics and leadership and companies and religion. It's always a mess when somebody sets all these rules. They're very, very strict, and then it comes out that they were breaking them. And don't you just hate that when you set some rules? Don't you just hate it when you set a rule and you can't even keep the rule that you set? And it for me, it's even worse when someone catches me breaking the rule. All right, kids, now listen. You know, I'll say to my family, one bowl of ice cream, that's all we have. That's enough for everybody. And then they come into the kitchen as you're serving yourself your third bowl. Are there any rules that you've imposed on others and you're not keeping them? And sometimes they can be a really, really big deal. Nicodemus, it's like he raises his hand. Yeah, yeah, what, Nicodemus, what do you have to say? And it's like he says, don't we have a rule against killing people? And I'm sure it got quiet for a moment because that's like in the big 10 rules, 10 commandment rules. Don't we have a rule against killing people? He's reaching out for them. He's trying to get them to see it. And they won't listen. In fact, they completely compromise. Or actually what they do is they justify their position. They like attack him. And they just justify the whole thing. And I have discovered that before I ever compromise an area of my life, I usually justify it. And they justify what they're going to do to Jesus, and that causes them to compromise. Whenever I'm very religious and that's all I've got, I have to justify the things that don't square away. Here's the definition of justification. Justification is this. It's when I make it okay to have what I want, even though I know it's wrong. I make it okay to do something wrong because I want it. And they want something to happen a certain way, so they justify it. And it'll lead to compromise. So British Open this weekend, and so if you're a golfer, you're probably watching and tracking with that. Tiger Woods in it, and he's sort of like got a shot. He's a few back, but he's in the top five. He hasn't won a major tournament, and he's had a lot of troubles in life in his golf game ever since he's had a very public meltdown. I mean, everybody saw what Tiger went through. He was at the top of his career and then just completely fell off the mountain. And this isn't a bag on Tiger thing. This is very public. You can read this interview at ESPN where I read it. That when they ask him what happened, when he finally got through counseling and they said, "Why? What happened? Why did you do that?" He said the most interesting thing. He said, "You know, I had worked so hard all of my life. I had just worked and worked and worked and worked all of my life. And I finally got to the place where I told myself, I deserve to have what I want." And so he justified his behavior, which eventually caused him to compromise in his marriage. And do you know whenever you compromise, the very term means to weaken? When something becomes compromised, if a bridge becomes compromised, it means it's become too weak to travel across. When an army, when some portion of an army in a battle becomes compromised, it means that the enemy has broken through and they're in danger of defeat. But long before I compromise, I have to justify. And justification, I mean, here's how it works for me. It's like I'm in a courtroom and I'm the lawyer and the judge and the jury. I mean, I play all three roles, and so I present the case on why I should have it. I've worked really super, 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 super hard. And then, you know, there's me up at the judge's seat nodding in agreement. And here's the jury over here, and that's me too, that's gonna give the verdict. And who do you think is gonna win? Me. So I'll justify it, and then I'll compromise. And I'll weaken some area of my life, and I won't even realize that his marriage became so weak he lost his marriage. And I can lose an area of my life that I'm not supposed to lose because I'm living in compromise because at some point I justified it. A lot of my ministry, I've worked with high school and college age students. I always had that at some point. I've been doing that too. And I would sit with guys that had a girlfriend, and we would talk about how they were going to handle themselves sexually, and I'd say, well, you know, what do you think about sex? And they would just say, oh, I like it. You know, sex is the easiest thing to talk to guys about because it's really, really simple. I like it, I want more, and like every 20 minutes I'd like to have it. So it's like easy conversation. But they're Christ followers, they're with Jesus, and I'm like, well, listen, you know, you're going to get married someday if you're going to marry this girl, and sex is going to be a big, big part of your life, but it's going to be very different when you get married. And, you know, it's clear that now is not the time. Some things are so dynamic that you need the right timing. It's like nitroglycerin. Like, you have to time things right. And sex is that way. It has to be in the right context and the right timing. But if it isn't, all that power can actually be destructive. And so you're explaining this, and they're just like, but you don't know how hard it is. And I'm a guy, and I'm a young guy, and I'm just like always. Or the girls, you know, said, but I love him. And I'm like, girl, you don't love him. You're just in heat, you know. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is that I'm trying to talk to them saying you're justifying something that's going to lead you to compromise, and you're going to weaken an area of your life. And every guy is so sure that when they get into marriage, they're going to have like this great sex life. We're going to have sex like 19 times a day. It's going to be awesome. And then they get into marriage, and they recognize that it isn't the same when it's your wife. Having sex with some girl after a night of bar hopping, you know, is way different than your wife, because once you're married and the two become one flesh, that's like a really close thing. Adam in the Bible with Eve, his wife says, like, she's got your same bones. And so having sex with someone like that is way different than one night stands. And so here, now I've justified how I handle I'm justified my sexual life, and I've compromised, I've weakened an area of my life, and then I get into my marriage and I can't understand why we just don't even have a great sex life. Well, because you went into your marriage, you had weakened your ability to be sexual. And so now you're weak. And so you're trying to explain that to someone. So I just want to ask, is there any area of your life you're justifying? Because whatever you're justifying will soon be your area of compromise, and it'll become weak, and you could lose it. Now here's the way to if you want to not compromise, here's the way to do it. Invite Jesus into the discussion. When you're the attorney and the judge and the jury, invite Jesus to present his case to you. Invite him in, oh, this is great, I'm going to do it. And then invite him to come and talk to you about what your future will look like. It's like, Tiger, listen, here's where your future's going. You're going to damage your career. You're going to lose your wife. You're going to have a public meltdown. This is going to be a huge scandal. Your entire reputation is going to be globally rocked. I don't want that for you. Where do you need to invite Jesus into the conversation? You know where? Wherever you're justifying something. And, you know, they justify it. In this story, they justify it. And it doesn't go well sometimes when you invite Jesus in the conversation. He's like, is anything, you know, you're breaking the rules. Are you sure you want to do this to Jesus? And I just wanted to say, we design everything at East Lake Church on the weekend so you don't have to do it by yourself. Because sometimes when you bring up the Lord with people, it's rocky. It does not go smoothly. It doesn't go smoothly for Nicodemus. So we do everything on the weekends so there's some place where you can invite somebody so you have some help. So the message is going out. You have some help. That's the weekends here. And in this snapshot of Nicodemus, this is a snapshot, what we find out is this right here. A relationship with Jesus promotes courage. Religion will always end in compromise. Now here's the good news, and you can see it in your notes. You can experience love. Third snapshot, let me read it to you. Later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. So this is after the cross, Jesus has died. Now Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly because he feared the Jewish leaders. With Pilate's permission, he came and he took the body, and was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. So here's our guy. Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and alloys, about 75 pounds of spices. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with the spices and strips of linen. This was in accordance with the Jewish burial custom. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden was a new tomb, which no one had ever been laid. Because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. What a story. I mean, look at the process that Nicodemus goes through. And when you have a relationship with God, when you have a relationship with Jesus, it is a process. I mean, he starts with, he can only be with Jesus at night. And nobody gets to know. I'm not sure about any of this. And Jesus accepts him right where he is and loves him. But like right where he is, he's right there. And then he has to like go through the rapids and try to show people like it could be different for you. He has this courage he probably never even thought he had. It could be different for you if you have a relationship with Jesus. Now, and think about this. Of all the people that Father God could have picked to bury his son, I mean, think about it. He chooses Nicodemus. I mean, think about the story. Talk about coming out of the darkness. I mean, all through history. I mean, this is wide open. Everybody knows now. All through history, everybody knows that Nicodemus was the one that buried the Lord. He carried his body. He saw what he looked like when he came off of the cross. He washed him. He prepared him for the resurrection. God picked Nicodemus. And of all the people that you think would ever get that honor, someone that starts out that way, who is it in your life and you can't imagine God ever picking them to do something special? You're just hoping they stay out of jail, stay off the streets, stay out of bankruptcy, stay out of divorce. It never even occurred to you that they could be someone that God could pick for something so special. Do you think anybody ever would have, even in a million years, anybody would have ever thought it'd be Nicodemus? I mean, one of the disciples, one of his family, somebody, Nicodemus prepares the Lord for the resurrection? Who have you lost faith in? You lost hope? It's like they're never going to make it. The story of Nicodemus, the one chosen to prepare the Lord for his resurrection. Now here's another way to look at it. Where in your own life, if you thought, I'll never get picked for something special, not after what I've done. I mean, I'm barely glad to just be in God's kingdom. I mean, I'll take the back row of the bus. And yet God has something special planned for you. So the story of Nicodemus, and you see it in the Bible, there's the good, and there's the bad, and there's the ugly. And then at the end of the day, God picks him to prepare Jesus for the resurrection.